Hey everybody, it's Laura. So I don't know about you, but I've been feeling kind of sluggish lately, and it's made me really want to focus on feeling better. And I realized that feeling better isn't just about hitting the gym or eating perfectly. It's really about finding those little routines that fit seamlessly into your life and give you that extra boost. For me, that's been daily Nutri-Greens. Remember those mornings when grabbing coffee was the only option and a salad by lunchtime felt like a distant dream? For me, daily Nutri-Greens changed that. It's a powder packed with everything good. Essential greens, fruits, prebiotics, and probiotics. All of the ingredients you need to feel your best. But the real win is that it's so easy to integrate into my day. I just put a scoop in water, do a quick blend, and I'm good to go. You can use it in smoothies, water, whatever you like, but it's delicious and convenient, and honestly, that's a win in my book. So check out Daily Nutri-Greens from Equilibria. You can find it at myeq.com. This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create positive change in the world every day by being a conscious consumer. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, founder of Brightly.eco, and I started this podcast a few years ago because I wanted a place to talk about the gray areas around sustainability and how being a conscious consumer can be challenging and confusing, but it's totally doable. So join me in the name of reducing waste and living positively in the name of the planet.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right, Good Together listeners, if you are the type of person who jumps up and down whenever I share a statistic on this podcast, this is the episode for you. If you're not, I still think you're going to get a lot out of what I'm going to talk about today because I personally find it fascinating, and I would think that if you've been listening to the podcast for even just a few episodes, you'll probably share some of the same interests that I have. Otherwise, why are you listening? So hey listeners, this is Laura, as always, and today I'm hopping in with another solo episode. So, you know, we are trying these out, we keep getting great feedback, so I will hop in from time to time to talk about, you know, things that I'm seeing in my life, whether it's, you know, sharing my food waste tips or talking about DIY projects, clean beauty, etc. But also, because I am the host of this podcast and the founder and CEO of Brightly, I get a lot of really interesting things sent my way from time to time. So nonprofits or studies that have been done, like we hear a lot about these awesome things going on in the world of conscious consumerism and really climate change awareness. So occasionally I'll hop in here to talk about this with you. So today we're going to talk about something that I find to be, like I said, super interesting. And that is, you know, the amount of people in the United States who seem to actually agree on climate change policies is much more than I thought. And you know why I thought that? Because I do think there's a bunch of different, I don't know, what do you call it? Like sowing of divisiveness in this country, right? We have so many people on one side of the aisle, quote unquote, or others. We also just have a lot of people who are, in my mind, completely incapable of having any kind of like debate with somebody who disagrees with them, right? So you might try and say something to them and, you know, just try and have like a normal, thoughtful conversation. But I find like more and more, it just seems really difficult to do that. Like people just get so personally offended by the fact that you may or may not agree with them. And it's just, you know, it's kind of a pain, right? but when this study came out, I was really surprised. So Yale, the university, has a program called the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication. It's a really fascinating arm of, I believe it's their School of Environment, and then it's a partnership with their journalism-related resources on that campus. I've been following this program for a while because they are all about how media, journalists, podcasters like me, etc., can talk about climate change with people and do it in a way that is informative and not scary. And as you know, like, that's a big reason why I started this podcast. So when I saw Yale cared about that, I thought, well, that's cool. So I've been involved with them for a little bit, just on the sidelines. And they recently sent me this report, and it's called Climate Change in the American Mind, Politics and Policy. And they actually partnered with George Mason University to do a big study. So what did they do? Did the big study. They surveyed about 1,000 people. And the results really did, like I said, show something promising, which is that of the people they polled, registered voters really are all about protecting the planet. And we're going to talk a little bit more about those results. So it was a pretty solid mix of people. That's why I was really excited about this, right? Like you could poll one side or the other and kind of receive results that you were expecting, right? Like we all have certain stereotypes about what political party is going to think what. And unfortunately, usually those stereotypes aren't completely off base. That being said, this study actually had a decent swath of people that they talked to. So of the polling that they did, 49% were Democrats, 36% were Republicans, and 11% were independents. And I would love to talk to those independents because I'm always like, how are they defining this nowadays, right? Like when I was in school, you may or may not know, I was a political science and journalism double major. So obviously this kind of stuff is right up my alley, but also like, I feel like the definition of independent is so different from back when I was in college, which wasn't that long ago, but also was a long time ago. Like it's, I'm not gonna date myself, but listeners, you know, I'm in my mid 30s. So there we go. Okay. So let's talk about like what people agreed on, because we know exactly what they disagreed on. So anyway, what they agreed on. So roughly half of these folks said that global warming should be a high or very high priority for the president and Congress. So 54%. Not surprising, right? That seems to say that it should be a high or very high priority. You know, as much as I'd like everyone to agree on that, I think that there also are other issues at play here. But an even higher amount of people, 66% of these people, said that developing sources of clean energy should be a high, very high priority for the president and Congress. So that's exciting. And as we go further into that, specific conservation and restoration policies that people were excited about, I mean, this is what I love. So as I go down and read these, we're looking at least 75% agreement across the board. So all of the parties, all these folks, like people want to, number one, provide federal funding to help farmers improve practices to protect and restore the soil so it absorbs and stores more carbon. That's cool. Like, we have talked about companies that are doing these types of initiatives in the past. We will specifically pull some out in the show notes. But there are so many cool carbon capture type projects going on in the field of agriculture. So the fact that 82% of these people polled said, regardless of what party they were in, said, look, we want to help fund that with the federal government. Yes, absolutely. The same amount of people also said they supported creating more parks and green spaces in low-income communities and communities of color. So I also find that to be a win across the board. I mean, who doesn't want another park? I mean, we'd think nobody, but oftentimes you get into the brass tacks on the local level. You can run into a lot of what they call NIMBYs, not in my backyard, but I'd like to think that parks and green spaces are something that we can prioritize. The next thing that they talked about, which I find to be, you know, also very interesting, is the topic of green energy. So there were a bunch of different, and the other thing I'll mention within the course of this, this study, all these questions that they were asking these people had real life, examples. So it's not like they're just like, if there was a magic person that appeared on this planet and said that they could solve climate change, would you say yes or no? Like, it's not silly like that. It's like the federal funding to help farmers improve practices around carbon capture with soil. Like, that's a real thing. And there's real initiatives going on behind the scenes about that. So I preface that because when we think about green energy, there's a lot going on in that space as well. So, I mean, across the board here, over 75% polled are green on these things, but like providing tax rebates to people who have solar panels or purchase energy efficient or even solar vehicles, solar powered vehicles. You know, we want to make sure that residential buildings in low income communities are more energy efficient. This one was super interesting. So they love to, almost everyone was in agreement about developing a national program to train people from low-income communities and communities of color for new jobs in the renewable energy industry, like wind and solar. I think that in today's day and age, where we have so many people going through job transitions, right? Like, there's so many layoffs, unfortunately, going on. There's also, you know, a big divide, I think, between what our economy is used to paying for service industry jobs and what we as a society need to be paid to have living wages. Like, there's just so much turmoil going on there. And so from my perspective, the more that we can get people into these jobs that require more training, but jobs that are going to be around for a super long time and are jobs that we need, like jobs in wind and solar, you know, whenever you start getting worried, like we all do, about AI taking our jobs, which we've talked about this a ton at Brightly, but I love AI. I think it's really amazing. There's so many cool applications of it. But let's think, you know, if we all want to think about protecting our jobs, like what are things that we can do that computers probably aren't going to be able to do for us for a long time? I would think, you know, more some of this more mechanical stuff, more of these, you know, what we call it, doing things with your hands. And then, of course, talking on podcasts, right? I guess that we could maybe train a model on my voice. I don't think it would do as good a job, though. I don't know. We'll see. And then the last few things in this, you know, green energy perspective, I'd say is, you know, there's a lot of support for another program to retrain people who used to work in the fossil fuel industry to go work in the renewable energy industry, which that's really interesting. And then finally, a broad agreement here on tax credits. You know, if to incentivize people to buy more conscious consumerism items, like, you know, appliances that are more energy efficient. So that to me is really, really what it's all about. Like, we've talked a lot about you as a consumer making that conscious choice. But most of the time when you're doing that, it's totally up to you. It's a little bit more expensive for you and you kind of have to do that. But if the government's going to give you a tax credit, really like giving you the ability to write that off, that's huge. So I'm super excited about that. Other, you know, key things that came out of this report. Number one, like people are excited to build local energy infrastructure. Meaning, you know, for the most part, people are excited about solar and wind farms. There is some support for stuff like electric vehicle charging stations, and then things like high voltage power lines that are going to distribute the clean energy. One thing that there's not a lot of support of, and I'm not surprised by this one, given all the current events, but like, I'd say current media around this topic is nuclear power plants. Like only 34% of the people polled here in this study were in support of that. And if you haven't listened to the episode on nuclear power that I did with my husband, Eric, who was a nuclear engineer on a submarine for a big part of his career, you've got to go listen to it because he has the most interesting perspective on it. I mean, we actually were just watching, there was the Netflix it's not a documentary. It's a, what's it called when it's a show, it's like based on something. It's like based on a true story, right? Anyway, guys, you bear with me. But we watched the one that was talking about, the Fukushima incident. And, you know, it's always a little bit frightening watching those things with him because he's over here like, well, if they would have done this, someone would have done that. And, or he'll say something like, oh yeah, they're screwed. And so that's always a lot of fun to listen to. But yes, only 34% of people wanted that to happen. And my personal thoughts on that are I'm conflicted. Like, I do think in theory, right? In theory, nuclear power is like the best thing ever because you're able to get so much energy from very little resources. The problem happens when we think about disposal of waste, which we've gotten better at, to be clear, but it's not great still. And, you know, there's just, to me, there's too much human error potential here, as we've seen in some of those past incidents, that just gives me pause. Maybe that's something we can get the computers to do. Although, you know, me over here, like an old person can let the AI get the computer. But then maybe that turns into like a Terminator situation. So maybe we don't want them to do that. I don't know. Okay. This is really where, okay, so we've kind of talked about where people were in agreement. And then now we started to talk a little bit about where they're starting to disagree. You know, specifically nuclear power, which that's an easy one to think people disagree. But here's where I really honed in on, because it just is so much all about what we do on this podcast and Brightly, which is the willingness of people to take political actions to reduce global warming. And if you're familiar with the way a lot of these studies work, anytime you hear any statistic that says blank amount of people are going to do, you know, X, Y, and Z, it's from a study like this, and then they just extrapolate it over the rest of the United States or the rest of like whatever group of people they're talking about. So like, it's not that they literally pulled everyone, it's that, you know, they're extrapolating it. So with this study, as I've been going through and saying like, oh, 70% of people agree with this, 70% of people agree with that. Like, you know, of course it's based on the data that we're getting from this limited poll of people, but in my mind, it is tracking with what I've experienced. So willingness to take political actions to reduce global warming. So this is where it starts to get a little bit more divisive, and also where it starts to get a little bit more, I don't know if I'd say depressing, but like, this is kind of where the rubber hits the road. So let's talk about it. So roughly half of those people, of registered voters, right? Because that's who they're extrapolating this to. Registered U.S. voters say that they would sign a petition about global warming. Now that to me is interesting. Like, why would you not sign a petition? I mean, perhaps the reason why people weren't more agreeable to it, because to me it seems like a no-brainer, maybe it's because that's kind of vague. Like, what does that petition actually say? And in which case, you could probably think, well, maybe I wouldn't just blanketly say I'm going to sign a petition if I don't know what's on it. However, the next few things are less vague. So only 32% of people polled said that they would donate money to an organization working on global warming. Again, maybe there's some nuance there saying like, well, what is this organization actually doing to fight against global warming, which is a valid question. But to me, that seems pretty low. This one really hurt me. 30% of people said that they would contact government officials about global warming. So we're saying like, you know, just a small amount of people polled would just even contact their representative about global warming. And I want to be clear here, listeners, like, people often conflate the term global warming with climate change. I don't conflate them, right? Like, we know that to some extent, global warming is causing climate change, but they're not interchangeable. To me, global warming is much more specific than the concept, quote unquote, of climate change. So for me, not contacting my representative, especially when it's, you know, applicable, maybe I wouldn't just go out of my way to randomly contact them, but if there was something that was going to come up, which I'll tell you, there are plenty of policies that come up around, specifically around global warming, that's depressing to me. Maybe it's because they think it's too hard. Maybe we need to do better for that. I mean, that was super interesting. About the same amount of people, right? 30% said that they would, 30% of people polled said that they would volunteer their time to an organization working on global warming. And about the same amount of people said they would even meet with the elected official, their staff, about global warming. Again, we could speculate as to why this is. Again, maybe it's a little bit too vague for people. I also think, too, like, the vast majority of us, myself included, I feel like don't think we know enough about global warming maybe to feel like we're, maybe we have a little bit of imposter syndrome saying, okay, well, what would I even talk to my representative about, like, specifically about global warming? So perhaps there's a bit of a cheat sheet we can come up for you, because I have a few ideas here in my head. I'm not going to get into them right now, but I think that there might be a few talking points that we could all come together on and think through. Okay. I also, if you can't tell, I'm getting over a slight cold, so apologies if my voice is a bit weird. Let's see. Okay, the next part is where it gets spicy, but it's not necessarily the spicy thing it's going to be. So the next two questions that they asked these folks were about civil, nonviolent civil disobedience. And I laugh because I'm like, I wonder if people would actually admit to something like that. I don't know. But 1 in 4 registered voters would support an organization engaging in nonviolent civil disobedience against corporate or government activities that make global warming worse. Yeah, and I mean, depending on what the definition of that one is, I'm totally in for it, right? Like, we need to make sure. I mean, we had the gentleman that had chained himself to, I believe it was Chase Bank, Peter Kalmus, that's right, Dr. Peter Kalmus, and that was a fascinating podcast. You've got to go back and listen. But that, to me, is a great example where, and that probably, yeah, I would suppose what he was doing certainly was civil disobedience, and it certainly wasn't violent, so I don't see why we would not support something like that. But that's just me. That's just me. And then 15%, so much smaller amount of people, said that they would personally engage in such nonviolent civil disobedience. So, although, and then there's a caveat here, although this 15% said that they would be willing to do something like that, only 5% said that they would be willing to get arrested as part of such an action. So Dr. Peter Kalmus was arrested for his, disobedience and chaining himself to that, the bank headquarters. So again, this is not overly surprising. Not overly surprising. So the last bit of this, which we'll kind of close up the statistics and I'll offer a few more thoughts here, is who should act. And we talk a lot about who should act, and I like to talk a lot about actions that we as consumers can do, but I also know that you, and I share the same thoughts, think that of course corporations and industries should act. I mean, 70% said of course. The Congress, U.S. Congress, 63%. The parties, the main parties, the Democrats and Republicans, yes. And, I mean, the list just goes on and on. And everybody's just saying yes. Like, why wouldn't you say that? I mean, I suppose you could vote down the quote-unquote citizens themselves. That was the piece that was polled, I suppose, if you really felt like you had already done all you could do. You could vote that one down. However, half of people polled here said they themselves should be doing more to personally address global warming. And if they asked me, which they didn't, I was not part of this poll, I would agree. I would say, of course, there's more I could be doing to address global warming. Now, you could argue that not only am I doing a lot in my personal life, but of course I'm doing a ton in my professional life. I've dedicated my whole professional career to helping just talk more about conscious consumerism and, you know, by proxy, addressing global warming. And of course, there's more specific things I could be doing, and that's why I would put myself still in that camp if I could be doing more. Again, I think in general, just making sure we're aware of what's going on, making sure that when we have some of these catastrophic weather events, that we look into what's actually going on, right? And understand how global warming is affecting global weather patterns is very interesting. And if you've ever wanted to light a fire under yourself about that, go look and see what type of disaster zones you're in, because I guarantee you're in some type of one. I myself, having lived on the West Coast for a long time in various parts of the West Coast, my risk level has just gone all over the place, from being really close to wildfires and right sitting on top of a fault line, literally, when I was in the Bay Area, to being at, you know, high risk of rising sea levels and catastrophic events of that nature here now when I'm in Seattle. So just depending on where I am, good luck for me. But you could also choose to live in perhaps less of a volatile place in the United States or really around the world. That being said, we're all affected by these types of things. And, you know, think about the folks, unfortunately, in Chicago just last week at the time of this recording, who had the worst air quality. And it certainly was in the country. I can't remember if it was in the world or not, but it was terrible because of the wildfires that were happening in Canada. So I would just tell us listeners, like, as a society and as conscious consumers, the first thing we should always be doing is researching it and being curious and understanding more, and not necessarily being like, oh, well, these woods are on fire because of climate change. It's not necessarily the case. Like, sometimes there's, you know, specific reasons for that. You should also listen. I had a fascinating episode with somebody who does prescribed burns. And is a firefighter that does that. And she and I had a great conversation. We'll link that in the show notes. But I say that because the whole wildfire situation is much more nuanced than you just think about it if you just immediately jumped to conclusions like that. So be curious. And remember, like, the last statistic I'll leave you with is, like, of people polled, only 11% of registered voters of this poll think that the U.S. government is responding well to global warming. Yeah, I agree with that too. I mean, I would say in general, the U.S. government is responding well to nothing. I mean, I just think we have so much red tape at our disposal, and it doesn't ever really seem like we're having progress on many things. That's my own personal view, but I mean, neither here nor there. That's a conversation for another day. But no, I think that we have got to do better in terms of holding corporations accountable. A lot of that starts from the top, right? It starts from the government. But again, we as consumers can continue to make different purchasing decisions, and we can continue to vote with our feet, vote with our dollars, etc., and drive progress forward from that perspective. The other thing I'll mention when we talk about voting with your dollars is, of course, there's the direct way to do that, right? Which is purchase or not purchase things. But the other thing that's interesting when you think about that effect multiplied is when companies, or even when investors, are looking at funding companies that are in specific spaces that are starting to see movement, that becomes a lot more attractive. So for instance, you know, Brightly has investors, and we go out and we pitch and we try to get more of them. Every year it gets, I mean, geez, I can't say every year it gets easier, because it does not. I mean, fundraising is difficult. We're going through some kind of crazy market situations right now. But in terms of me having to convince people that sustainability is a thing, that's gotten easier every year. It was not quite as easy when we founded this company about 5 years ago. So that is because of you, listeners. We, as a society, are saying we care more about sustainability. We're not just saying it out loud. We're showing the powers that be that we're serious about this by our consumption patterns. So good for you. I don't know if you noticed, but Ziploc just came out with their own version of Stasher bags. And I'm very conflicted about this, because on the one hand, Ziploc is, like, you could argue, one of the biggest contributors to single-use plastic in the modern home, right? We all got addicted to using those little plastic sandwich baggies, which they really pioneered. But now they've seen so many people buy Stasher bags or silicone, reusable silicone bags, that they've thought that they wanted to get in on the trend. So now you can find them at the grocery store. Whereas before, you might not have found those Stasher bags because, you know, maybe the grocery was not stocking them, but of course, the grocery is going to stock Ziploc bags. The one thing before you go and feel awful about Stasher getting, you know, copied, Stasher actually was acquired, man, a long time, but acquired by SC Johnson, right? SC Johnson is, I just had to Google it while I was talking to you. I couldn't remember what the company was. SC Johnson. And that's who owns them now. I'm not saying that we should not give credit where credit's due. Stasher was actually founded by an Iranian-born American entrepreneur, a woman named Kat Nouri, which I'd love to talk to Kat. Let's get her on the podcast because I feel like that would be fascinating. But she was the one who made up this. She created the silicone sandwich bag. And so would love to talk to Kat. Has since been sold to SC Johnson. So now, wait, who owns Ziploc? Ooh, hold on. I would have looked this up before, listeners, but is it SC Johnson? It is. Ooh, the plot thickens. The plot thickens. I thought maybe they did. Interesting. If you could see me now, I'm like, have my little conspiracy strings going around. So it appears SC Johnson a long time ago bought Stasher bag, knowing full well that they were buying a competitor to their bread and butter of the Ziploc bags. And then they waited for a while to get the sales data on it and perhaps the design on it. Now they've released their own version. And maybe in the future, we won't call them Stasher bags anymore. Again, the plot thickens. We still communicate and sell and love Stasher bags. They still, I believe, they're still their own separate entity. I mean, everybody that we've ever talked to is, you know, still under the umbrella of Stasher. And I believe they still have their own CEO. But very interesting. Well, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent about Stasher bags and Stasher bag ownership, but I did. So maybe that was an interesting bonus for you if you stayed to the end of this episode. But the point I was trying to make, bringing everything all back, is that even if you think the acquisition of a company like Stasher, a small company who made a really big difference, I believe they were even on Shark Tank at one point before they were acquired, even if you think that that's not a good thing, which you could probably debate that, whether or not it makes sense, at the end of the day, now, the technology behind Stasher is going to be more widely distributed and perhaps made cheaper because of the immense scale that SC Johnson can provide. And whether or not we feel personal feelings about that company owning it, we can't argue with that, at least. We can't argue with the scale, the accessibility, and the affordability that situation is now going to bring to the concept of a single-use plastic bag. So when we think again about having the biggest impact that we can, you may or may not be a skeptic as you listen to this podcast. You may think what I do as an individual does not matter, but I'm here to tell you it really does. And when we listen to reports like this, when we see what people are actually buying and doing with their hard-earned dollars and then their free time, what they're using to, you know, learn about, like listening to this podcast, I remain extremely hopeful. I think we've just scratched the surface. And I am encouraged by the fact that studies like these do show a general support across all parties for various initiatives that can fight back against climate change, right? Not every single one, but in general, we're moving forward in a more positive direction than I'd say we were 10 years ago, where there were much fewer people 10, 20 years ago that actually thought that climate change and global warming and all of the things that make up the term climate change were actually a thing. So listeners, I hope you enjoyed my podcast today. As always, please let me know some feedback. And we're going to include links to some of what I just mentioned earlier in the show notes. There's a few podcasts that I recommend you go back and listen to. My brain gets a little mushy towards the end of these. A few podcasts that I recommend you go back and listen to that we've done. And then we've got a bunch more coming up with more founders, more guests. I'm not just going to talk to you by myself all the time. We would never do that to you, but you do seem to enjoy these. So, we are going to have even more content come your way very soon. All right, listeners, thanks so much for joining me. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social media. You'll find us on almost everything at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.